second case on the southern panel's agenda for oral argument is Saticoy Bay LL Service 9050 et al. Versus Nevada Association Services et al. Case number 74153. I wanted to apologize to counsel in the case on behalf of Justice Stiglitz and myself for having oral argument conducted by video. Northern Nevada's weather has been pretty unstable, and it's expected to be that way again this afternoon and tomorrow morning. Both Justice Stiglitz and I have responsibilities on behalf of the court in front of the legislature tomorrow morning at 8 o'clock, and there is more than reason to believe that we wouldn't get back from Las Vegas in order to meet those responsibilities. That would also be true of the clerk, Elizabeth Brown. So we appreciate your accommodation of us. We'll ask Justice Silver to preside, and the time and clock will be managed from Las Vegas. Justice Silver, I think we're ready to go.
All right. Whenever you're ready to proceed, please state your name and also how much time will you need for rebuttal argument.
Thank you. Michael Bone on behalf of Appellant Saticoy Bay, and I would like to request 5 minutes for a rebuttal.
That'll be the order.
Facts and issues here are not that extensive, and we'll see how it runs. We would like, as appellant, for this court to reverse the order of summary judgment granted by the district court and to enforce the terms of the statute and require strict compliance with the time and manner provisions of the redemption statute. As this court knows, there's been a lot of litigation involving HOA foreclosures over the last few years. The legislature amended the statute substantially in 2015 and permitted a redemption period for owners of the property as well as lien holders on the property to protect their interests. The respondent's brief quotes from the minutes from the legislative session, noting that one of the purposes of the bill was to create a certainty about the consequences of the HOA foreclosures, so HOA home titles do not become clouded. Certainty is best delivered with strict compliance on these statutes. What happened, and even if this court does not find strict compliance is required, there was not even substantial compliance here. The redemption statute requires, if the property is to be redeemed by the former owner, to serve upon the purchaser a notice of redemption, a cashier's check for the amount paid by the purchaser along with any costs incurred plus 1% per month, and a certified copy of the deed. Now, we're not really complaining about the notice requirements. Notice was served by the former owner on the foreclosure agent, NAS. NAS, in turn, notified my office on behalf of Saticoy Bay of the purchaser's intent to redeem. Some days later, my office received a certified check, not from the owner, but from NAS. And the certified, not even a copy of the deed. The statute requires a certified copy of the deed. So that was not even delivered. It was rejected because the payment is not supposed to come from the foreclosure agent, who's supposed to be a neutral third party, but because it was supposed to come from the former owner of the property. And when I keep saying former owner, technically he doesn't become the former owner until the redemption period expires, because the period of redemption is still up in the air and he has the right to take the property, or redeem the property. This court has ruled a number of times that interpreting statutes, the court's supposed to use the plain meanings of the words, considering provisions as a whole and not render words or phrases superfluous. So that would require the certified copy of the deed to be produced, and that was not produced. We also learned during litigation and as part of the supplement filed by respondent Markley in this case that Markley didn't even provide the funds to NAS until the last day of the redemption. For whatever reason, NAS ponied up their own money and sent a certified check to my office, and again, without a copy, certified copy of the deed. In their supplement, or Mr. Markey's supplement, he claims that the money was his money from the surplus funds. This is legally and factually incorrect, because the statute 116.31164 provides that the proceeds from a foreclosure sale are first to go to satisfy the lien, then next to junior lien holders that have been wiped out by the lien, and if that is satisfied, then it would go to the record holder of the property. In this case, DITEC intervened into the district court. DITEC last week filed bankruptcy and has been dismissed from this case. But DITEC also got involved, claiming that they wanted to redeem the property if Mr. Markley didn't. But any excess proceeds belonged to the lien holder, which wasn't even DITEC. The recorded lien holder was Quicken Loans. DITEC was allegedly the servicer. There was no servicing agreement, etc. But I digress about DITEC because they're not part of the case anymore. A large part of my argument until we got the order yesterday was going to be, and DITEC is the one who filed the briefs. Mr. Markley simply filed joiners. And interpreting the statutes, the court has said that strict compliance is required in time and manner. And that is shown by use of the word must. And the redemption statute here uses the term must. Notice compliance can be substantial compliance. Now, this statute actually has three different provisions, a time provision, a manner provision, and a notice provision. So the statute really does embody both strict and substantial compliance. The substantial compliance is the notice provision. The notice provision is the email that was sent to NES and eventually forwarded to the principal of Satakoi Bay as well as my office. And again, we're not really complaining about the notice provision. What we're complaining about is the substantial compliance with the manner. The check came, as I said, came from NAS. We learned after the fact that Mr. Markey didn't even come up with the money until the redemption period had expired. And of course, there was no certified copy of the deed. Both sides have cited the cases of Einhorn, Casillas, and Leyva, all foreclosure mediation cases, all requiring production of documents to be able to actively participate in foreclosure mediation.
And here, Sequoia, didn't they have actual knowledge? I mean, in this case, they had actual knowledge that Markley was the owner of the property. How are they prejudiced?
The statute doesn't require prejudice. Again, you have to give meaning to all the parts of the statute. The legislature, for whatever reason, decided not just a copy of the deed, but a certified copy of the deed.
Well, I'm just asking you, you brought up foreclosure mediation to figure out, you know, who actually owned the property. That's not even a question here with Mr. Markley, was it?
No. And, my client and I recognize that the purpose of the statute is to help homeowners keep their property and to allow even lien holders to maintain the security for their property. But if you're going to give meaning to the terms of the statute, again, strict compliance is required for time and manner. And that's what the foreclosure mediation cases stated. Another issue that was raised in the briefs is that Satakoi Bay, my office, never objected to the form of the documents that were received. There's no requirement for us to do so. All we're required to do so, the only requirement from the purchaser is that upon proper presentation of the notice redemption, the cashier's check, and their certified copy of the deed, all there is for us to do is assign the certificate of redemption, which then gets recorded. That wasn't provided to my office either for our signature. Now, I asked this court for 5 minutes for rebuttal. I'm pretty much done with my argument at this point. I'd like to reserve the remaining time, if I may, unless there's any question. Yes, Your Honor.
Hi, Justice Hardesty. I do have a question for you, and I always appreciate your arguments to the court on these HOA cases. The issues surrounding these matters are sometimes pretty confounding. In this instance, as I understand it, your concern with respect to the failure to submit the certified copy of the deed showing ownership, the language in the statute, as you suggest, is fairly clear. What's not clear, and this is true in other statutes, is the remedy. The statute doesn't address a remedy or a consequence of failing to do so. Does that fact provide a basis for this court to look at the underlying legislative purpose for the statute in resolving this question?
There is not a remedy or a penalty, but the statute, I would respectfully submit, Your Honor, that in order to be able to redeem, you have to comply with the statute, and there was no compliance with the statute.
Okay.
And there were a number of issues. I know I'm going over into my 5 minutes here. There were a number of issues. You know, the money didn't come from Mr. Markley. The money didn't get to NES from Mr. Markley until the 19th of January, which was the last day to redeem. And Mr. Markley, in his declaration to the court in the motion for a summary judgment, said this is my money that's excess proceeds, when in fact that was that's not what the statute read. So there was not even substantial compliance with the terms of the statutes.
Okay. Thank you.
Thank you, Your Honor.
Good morning. My name is Bridget Foley. I represent the respondent, James Markey, in this matter. I want to start my argument by addressing the questions that the court raised, because I think that they turn on the key issues that are present on this appeal. The primary issue that seems to be before the court at this oral argument is whether there was compliance with the statute even though Mr. Markey failed to provide a certified copy of the deed when he redeemed the property. Our argument is that there was still substantial compliance with the provisions of the statute in this case. And to get to your question, Justice Hardesty, about whether you look to the legislative intent if there's no remedy within the statute, our position is that's exactly what would need to happen. The statute has to be viewed as a whole, and the specific circumstances of this redemption also have to be taken as a whole in determining whether the redemption was successful, and whether there was compliance with the statute. As Mr. Bone stated, and we agree, these 2015 amendments were adopted in order to strike a balance among all of the parties to these HOA foreclosure sales. There was a severe imbalance in the prior statutory scheme, and that was evidenced by all of the litigation that's been clogging up the state and federal courts here, where there were often notice issues to the homeowners, notice issues to the deed of trust holders, things like other issues like that, and these HOA foreclosure sales were wiping out deeds of trust and divesting homeowners of their most significant asset in their life, which is their home. The amendments were enacted to strike a balance among everyone, to still give HOA foreclosure investors such as Sataquive an incentive to come to HOA foreclosure auctions and bid on the properties, because even if there was a redemption, their investment, they would still have a meaningful investment in that they would get interest on that payment that they made. They would be fully reimbursed. So they're not losing any money by coming and taking a chance and bidding on these HOA foreclosure auctions that have this 60-day redemption period now. There was more of a balance for the homeowners to have 60 days to try to redeem their properties and to get rid of all of the litigation and uncertainty about these cases. And when you look at the legislative history for these amendments and the fact that the overarching intent was to strike a balance, that means to not necessarily have to involve attorneys in courts all the time. And so
may I interrupt your argument?
Absolutely.
Let me ask you this question. as it relates to the notice requirement and the requirement to provide the certified copy of the deed, when similar requirements have been imposed by Chapter 116 on lenders in going into mediation, they were required to provide certified copies of their deeds of trust, and that was viewed as a pretty strict requirement. Part of that reason was to make sure that the person who was sitting there engaged in mediation actually had the authority to own the deed of trust. I think the purpose behind this provision is similar. It is to assure that the person who is redeeming the property is in fact the homeowner, and not someone that the homeowner has gone out and maybe sold the property to or entered some other bargain in order to try to circumvent the redemption requirement. In this case, there seems to be a concession by Mr. Bone that your client was in fact the owner. So even in the absence of a certified copy of the deed, the purpose of the statute would have been met. But how do we write a decision in this case in order to avoid the hypothetical that I'm suggesting, that substantial compliance, allowing a statute like this to be viewed for substantial compliance, kind of opens the door to allow homeowners to avoid the purpose that the legislature established, which was to limit redemption to property owners who actually own the property. How would you write that?
Sure. So in this case, Your Honor, to write the opinion, I do think it would be appropriate to look at those foreclosure mediation cases that this court has previously decided, such as the Einhorn, Leyva, and Pasillas case. In those cases, the court stated that the determination is based upon the totality of the circumstances of the specific case. So the decision would be to review the totality of the circumstances in this case. In this case, Sataquive has conceded that they were actually aware Mr. Markey was the homeowner and therefore entitled to redeem the property. There's no issue here. So substantial compliance is sufficient in order for him to redeem the property. Again, he's a lay person, and we want and the purpose of the statute is to enable homeowners to make meaningful attempts to redeem their property, their biggest asset. So in this case, the fact that he did not have a certified copy of the deed sent to Sataquive should not defeat his ability to redeem the property under the circumstances of this case. Sataquive has acknowledged that they were aware he's the actual owner. And also in those foreclosure mediation cases.
You would agree that the court's approach with respect to the presence or absence of deeds of trust in mediation concepts like Einhorn and Leyva and others, that same test would be applicable here.
I would agree that it would be reasonable for the court to adopt the tests stated in those cases. And specifically in the Pacias case at 127 NEV 470, the court stated that when determining what sanctions should be imposed in a case where there were violations of the foreclosure mediation statutes, there are a list of non-exhaustive factors the court is to consider, whether the violations were intentional. In this case, the failure to provide a certified copy of the deed by Mr. Markey was not intentional. The amount of prejudice to the non-violating party. There's no actual prejudice to Sadakoi Bay because they've conceded multiple times that they were aware Mr. Markey was the owner and entitled to redeem. And finally, the violating party's willingness to mitigate any harm by continuing meaningful negotiations. Throughout the 60-day redemption period, there was, fortunately in this case, a plethora of email exchanges reflecting the party's continued negotiations and discussions about this redemption. And there were even email discussions between DITEC and Sadakoi Bay and Sadakoi Bay's counsel about affecting the redemption earlier on in the redemption period so that Sadakoi Bay could move on, get its funds, and move on to other financial interests. So there was no prejudice to Sadakoi Bay. They were still willing to engage in negotiations to effectuate this redemption. And so the failure of Mr. Markey to provide the certified deed should not be detrimental to his ability to redeem his home. Again, even when applying the standards in the foreclosure mediation cases for a remedy for failing to strictly comply with a certain provision of the statute, it still should not divest Mr. Markey of his largest asset, his home.
Ms. Foley?
Yes.
Do we even need to really look to Einhorn in those cases when NRS 107 and the FMRs have mandatory sanction provisions? Didn't the legislature intend something different as it related to 116 when they indicated instead of having those mandatory sanction provisions, had remedies, suggested that remedies provided must be liberally administered? So isn't that in and of itself in the statute an indication that these would be treated, you know, like substantial compliance rather than kind of mandatory case-ending type sanctions?
Yes, Your Honor, we agree with that completely. There is more inclusive language, for lack of a better term, and more discretion in interpreting whether strict or substantial compliance is required with regard to the redemption statutes versus the foreclosure mediation statutes and rules. In DITEC's briefing, we discussed that specific provision within the 116, the 116 amendments that say they should be liberally construed, and interpreting them in the context and backdrop of the legislative intent, which is again to strike a balance. Here in this case, if Mr. Markey is not permitted to have redeemed his property based upon his good faith compliance with the provisions of the statutes, as well as the consideration that Sadakoi Bay has conceded that they knew Mr. Markey was the actual homeowner, would result in an absurd and completely unjust result in that Mr. Markey would be losing his largest asset when there is clearly substantial compliance with the redemption statute, which also important to note in this case, because we look at the totality of the circumstances, is it was a brand new statute. And again, Mr. Markey, like many homeowners, is not a lawyer. He's not a judge. He didn't go to law school. The statute was enacted to...
But Ms. Foley, would this apply? What proof would DITEC have needed to produce? I mean, there was more of a dispute about whether DITEC was entitled to have its place in these proceedings than there was about whether Mr. Markey was. So
the proof that DITEC would have needed to provide was also a certified copy of the deed of trust. And the statute specifically states that the security interest holder or the homeowner or a successor in interest is entitled to redeem. Here, DITEC was a successor in interest. And it would have needed to provide a certified copy of the deed of trust if we're going to view the statute under strict compliance standards.
And well, in this context, would we apply the same substantial compliance that we're going to apply to that you're asking us to apply to Markey to DITEC if they didn't come in with a certified copy?
In this circumstance, it would be the just and appropriate result to construe DITEC's compliance as substantial and apply the same standard. Again, because when you look at the facts of this case and specifically those emails, Sadakoi Bay and its counsel and DITEC were continuing to negotiate and try to resolve this redemption issue within this 60-day time period. And there were even specific monetary offers from Sadakoi Bay to DITEC to redeem the property or buy them out so that they can move on to other investments. There was never an issue raised by Sadakoi Bay of, hey, we need a certified copy of the deed of trust. There were still ongoing negotiations. So there was no prejudice to Sadakoi Bay. And had Mr. Markey not come in 15 days after DITEC asserted its intent to redeem, there very likely would have been an agreement reached between DITEC and Sadakoi Bay within the redemption period.
All right. Ms. Foley, just a couple questions. I see you're running out of time. Subsection 7 has the distribution plan. When does that kick in? Does it kick in the day Sadakoi Bay buys the property, or does it kick in 60 days after? So does it kick in after the redemption period? Like, should NAS have distributed all that money on day one? Or does NAS wait the redemption period and then, according to subsection 7, distribute in accordance with that subsection?
Again, looking in the statute, there seems to be a little bit of lack of clarity as to when the excess proceeds are to be dispersed. So, it seems like it would come down to a best judgment view for NAS as to whether they hold those funds in trust or they disperse the funds right away.
Okay. Thank you.
Thank you.
I'd like to clarify two things for the record. I misstated. I just reread Mr. Markey's declaration, and I was confused by the findings from the court. The declaration does say that the check was sent on January 15th, which was 4 days before the end of the redemption period. I misstated it was received at the last day of the redemption period. It was tendered on the last day of redemption period, or the NAS check was submitted according to the findings by the court. And counsel keeps referring to Mr. Markey's largest asset. This property was actually a second home. The deed of trust, which is part of the record, has a second home writer. And he states in his declaration he's a resident of Tennessee, not Las Vegas. So he, like my client, is an investor and not a homeowner. Justice Stiglitz, you asked about the fact there's no remedy for noncompliance. Does that mean anything? I would respectfully submit that there doesn't have to be a remedy for noncompliance. You're not entitled to relief unless you comply. And the language, the use of the word must indicates strict compliance, not substantial compliance. One of the purposes of the statute was to create certainty about the consequences of the HOA foreclosure.
So, Mr. Bond,
when you get into the area of...
I'm sorry, there's a, yes. there's a delay. So, but just before we get too far. So, under your approach, if he had provided a non-certified copy of the deed, that would not be sufficient either. We'd be having, you'd be making the same argument.
Correct.
Okay.
And I was just about to say that the when you get into substantial compliance, you know, if one of the purposes of the new statute was to avoid litigation, you get into a very nebulous area when you talk about substantial compliance. What is substantial? What is not substantial? You know, where do you draw the line? Like in this case, you need to involve the court system to determine whether or not the compliance was substantial.
But Mr. Bond, we're not litigating really whether he substantially complied by providing the deed. We're litigating whether or not he could use the bucket of money that was at NASS. Isn't that fair to say? That's really the issue that we're litigating here.
Well, we have raised both issues, but yes, you are correct on that. The distribution statute says after the sale. Now, that statute was not altered. I think it was renumbered, but it wasn't altered with the changes in 2015. And with the redemption period, I would respectfully submit that the sale is not complete until the redemption period is over. Because, and I don't think anyone or any of the foreclosure companies start to distribute excess proceeds immediately after the sale. It would be wise, and I would respectfully submit this court should hold that redemption or the excess proceeds don't get distributed until after the redemption period. And that goes back to if there was no lien on the property, then the homeowner would be able to use those funds, but there was a lien. And so Mr. Markley was using, or actually Quicken's, because Quicken was the owner of record of the deed of trust. There was no assignment to DITEC until 3 months after the redemption period had closed. And the legislature, for whatever reason, specifically said certified copy, and that's part of the manner. Now, like I said, there's three aspects. There's the manner aspect and the timing aspect, which requires strict compliance. And substantial compliance goes to notice. And my time is up. Unless you have any further questions, I respectfully submit it. Thank you.
All right. This case will stand submitted. I'd like to thank both sides for their arguments. And thank you for coming today.